Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. And Fred and I were just talking about brand loyalty and how it can sometimes be quite significant when we have issues of reliability with products.
You know, there's a number of examples out there. The ones I'm thinking of, though, had such strong loyalty that they weathered a problem. Toyota with their braking system. I don't know. I never really heard the details of that. But Ford has never really survived. Or I think they're still plugging along, but they just announced they're not going to do sedans anymore. I think they've given up on that market. They ceded it to Toyota. Even though people buy their trucks year after year after year, that fixed or found on the road dead saying it's haunted them for years.
And so you're pretty comfortable that's because of some of the reliability issues, or at least in part because of the reliability issues?
Oh, yeah. There's early on, Ford got, you know, was trying to drive to a lower cost and just get products out, and they made some cool products. But with the Ford 150, they made a very durable, long-lasting vehicle. And people, the loyalty of that is if my Ford 150 failed, I go get another one.
Yeah.
You know, or it's retired, or it's got a 500,000 miles on it now, I go get another one.
Yeah.
So there, the product spoke, not their marketing. I think their marketing followed up later when they realized, oh, these trucks are solid. Different team, different engineering team, different strategy, I'm sure, all kinds of stuff. But and there's example after example of products that failed, and it either irreparably damages the brand loyalty, or the loyalty is strong enough that people give you another chance. And I'm not exactly sure how I know reliability is a part of that, but I think there's more to it than that.
Yeah. And I mean, we talked about examples where something fails and that destroys the brand, and something and another thing will fail and it doesn't destroy the brand. And it's interesting. And I know you might have to cast your mind back a little while, but the Havilland Comet was the world's first commercial jet airliner, and it was also famous for sort of being at the unfortunate testbed for what we now know about fatigue in aircraft. Mm. So it had a couple of unexplainable mid-air disintegrations in early 1950s, and they worked out it was due to fatigue, and we now know a lot more about fatigue, and even they're able to even modify the Comet to essentially eliminate the causes of fatigue. But unfortunately, the brand took such a substantial hit that it never recovered commercially. And perhaps because when jet airliners fail, they tend to kill everyone on board. Whereas if something else fails, if your watch fails, you just don't know what the time is.
That could be life-threatening.
Yeah, well, that's
and
true.
Not being facetious, it can be. But I realized that when my son tore my watch off my wrist when he was 18 months old, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to wear a watch anymore while he's around. And then I realized that there's clocks everywhere.
Yep.
It's not hard to tell what time it is. But no. You're right. A catastrophic mid-air disintegration is usually not a good thing.
That's, as a rule, no.
Yeah, that makes the news usually. Let's explore a couple of bits of this before we dive into it. Let's take a short break from one of our messages that we cycle through on, and we'll be right back.
Hi, it's Fred here. Did you know that Carl Carlson and I are writing a book on reliability engineering management? Based on the feedback and encouragement of our students and clients, we have set out to write a practical book to help you improve your next project's reliability performance and your organization's ability to create reliable products. For a limited time, the draft chapters are available for free for you to read and review. Become a reviewer of this new work at ascendoreliability.com/go/REM.
Right. So, you know, Chris, there's been examples of where brand loyalty is connected to reliability. And I used to work at Hewlett Packard. And I think people beyond Hewlett Packard's employees knew that calculators and laser printers and a number of the test and measurement products that they used to make were sold at a premium, and it was worth it because mm-hmm. you'd only have to buy it once and it would just work, and it would work well for a long time. And they were able to charge for that differentiation. And part of it was it did cost more to make those products, yet they were able to have a larger profit margin because of that brand loyalty directly connected to people believing that and knowing that they would get a strong, robust, functional product for an extended period of time. And so products that failed from a reliability point of view, it was as much the response and the recovery that would keep the loyalty or destroy it. And in some cases, some products would have a reliability issue or failure or recall, and it would destroy the perception. And HP's brand promise of a durable, reliable product has been eroded over the years because of their personal computer systems and their more consumer products were just not as robust as those test and measurement equipment. They competed on price rather than on brand. On reliability, and it hurt them. Their market share and their profitability suffered because of that. But there's plenty of other examples out there of companies that fail something. I think you had an example from a Samsung phone, which I'm not all that familiar with.
Well, you had the Galaxy Note, which obviously had two goes at trying to resolve some battery fire issues with the lithium ion batteries, which were unfortunately mm-hmm. catching fire. And I suppose, to be fair, when all was said and done, the rate at which these batteries were catching fire was not that high, high enough for it to be well covered on social media, just because of the size of the market and the number of phones that existed, but still high enough for it to be a headache. And there were some issues within Samsung at the time. But I remember reading that obviously Samsung shares dipped quite dramatically straight away. Mm-hmm. But they've since recovered pretty well.
Well, they kind of dominate half the cell phone market for smartphones anyway. They have a huge proportion of the market. And there's a factor of the ecosystem around it, right? If I spent a couple hundred dollars on apps, I'm familiar with the operating system, it syncs with everything else I need to sync with. I would forgive quite a bit if I perceived that they resolved it and solved it and moved on, because the barrier to change is both financial and just time consuming to resync everything up. I changed the password on my router in the house the other day. I'm still finding things that need to get updated. I am never changing that password again. Well, I shouldn't say that. If I decided to go with a different home automation system, it'd be expensive. And I think there's a piece of that to this brand loyalty now, is that if you get embedded in a particular workflow, for lack of a better word, it creates a barrier to changing. I think Samsung benefited from that.
Well, they certainly did in terms of the transition from to essentially Apple. So Samsung's obviously an Android-based platform. I suppose what I found confusing was why a lot of people didn't go to other Android devices, because the ease of or the ecosystem you're talking about, essentially you're talking about the operating system more so than the phone. But for whatever reason, it appeared as if a lot of people tended to stay with Samsung. And there are a few studies about what actually happened. And sure, there were a couple of people who went from Samsung to Apple and Apple iPhone and Samsung's other Android-based smartphone platforms, but a large people just waited for the next model to come out. And yes, phones have functionality, and there are reviews on phones, smartphones that come out and say this phone can do this thing that this other phone couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about interfaces and things like that. And yes, people do put a premium on those, but the real big issue is the operating system. I would argue that if you look at laptops, especially PC laptops, there isn't a huge brand loyalty per se between Dell or Hewlett-Packard or Toshiba or anything else, because they still use the Windows operating system. Yeah. And you don't really need to change how you interact with a laptop if you're going between manufacturers with the same operating system. So it's interesting why people didn't go move away from Samsung, and maybe it's because I don't appreciate the extent to which people actually appreciate the phone specific characteristics.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I as you're saying that, I'm thinking that, well, Microsoft, I don't know if they still make phones or not. That's not a viable option for the hardware. ZTE, it's not widely available, and they're getting bad press recently, but I don't know if that was the case back then. Google has a phone, don't they? I think they actually offered a phone. I don't hear much about it in it, the Pixel.
Yeah.
See ads for that once in a while. But I think nobody else really had the reputation that Samsung and Apple have had built over the last 10 years, that they continue to innovate. They're going to be in the market for a while. They're supporting their phones. They have a track record of, by and large, making really good ones. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the reliability part, and I moved away from Samsung. I had a Samsung smartphone early on, and I used a phone jack or a headset jack into the side of the phone, and I didn't have the wireless at that time wasn't really strong or useful enough to go completely wireless. And that jack would fail. I failed it 3 times in 1 year. They sent me a new phone every time. And I was like, this is ridiculous. I my phone was still functional. I could hold it up to the side of my head, but I'm on these calls for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. That was getting painful. So I said, I need a phone that just works. And so I switched over to Apple and haven't looked back. But it was because of and I'm calling these guys saying, hey, I'm a reliability engineer, and this is what I think, you know, here's why I took it apart, and here's the problem you need to solve. And they're like, oh, thank you. Here's your new phone.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And to backtrack on something you said about Microsoft, because that's actually an interesting little mini case study. Microsoft teamed up with Nokia.
They teamed up with them. They bought them, I think.
Yeah. And then Nokia started creating these Lumia smartphones. And those smartphones were really, really good. There's no two ways. They are very, very good phones. And then the Windows operating system for smartphones came out, which is a very tile-based operating system. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really good. The reviews were very, very good. And I've used all three phones. And it's different, but still very, very good, but it never has really taken off.
No.
And I'd argue it's not because of lack of user interface or lack of functionality of the phones itself. It has to be something else. And one of those things, no doubt, would be the number of apps that are available in the Windows ecosystem versus the Android and iPhone ecosystems. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that could well explain it. But there is definitely a reason people are not buying Windows phones. And it could be marketing as well. Not many people know about it for whatever reason.
Well, they try, and they have their tablet. They keep advertising, and at least on Netflix, they have their tablet thing they keep advertising, but it's like 1-2% of the market. Mm-hmm. They had Zoom. Remember their music player?
Yep.
It's just that Microsoft has not had a hardware product line other than keyboards, which very few people know that Microsoft makes some of the best keyboards and mice out there. They are just durable, but so is everything else. It's good enough that it's not a differentiator. But their hardware is besides their software and reputation from Windows 3 and on, their hardware just has not built that reputation that HP did, and that it's just rock solid, durable, robust. You can count on it. They've come in and out of different markets. They've gone into it a variety of different ways, but they, even though they engineer really neat products, they're just not building that reputation of being durable. And then having the Xbox problem didn't help. That they're, when I look at Microsoft, they get two strikes. One is their software reboots and reinstalls, it seems like, every week. And I haven't used a Microsoft system in a long time, so I don't know if that's true. But I actually work with some of their hardware teams. Brilliant products. But the focus on durability wasn't always there. That wasn't a priority. And it wasn't seen as what they needed to do to be successful on market. And I told them, I think that's a mistake. This is why these other companies exist. It's because they make rock solid, durable products. And their app, one of their many responses that I heard was, we only want them to own the phone for a year and then buy a new one. If they don't buy a new phone every year, our model's not going to work. I says, well, if somebody wants to use it for 4 years and it doesn't do that, you've lost a customer for life and all of their friends.
So absolutely.
So I think this brand loyalty part is connected in so many different ways to the reliability and to the product. And I've seen a number of studies that show the magnitude of the importance of customers' perception of reliability and their ability to, for example, Whirlpool designs their washing machines and dryers so that they have a very low failure rate out to 10 years. And then after that, they attempt to create a Weibull distribution that's very steep, that pretty much, it's not like they put markers in there or things that are deliberately going to wear out, but they don't try to create a 20-year product so that they can survive for 10 years. They create a 10-year product that may fail in the next year. And so they've stripped out weight, they've stripped out all kinds of stuff for all kinds of reasons, sacrificing the 20-year life, but really religiously protecting the 10-year life. And they found in their marketing studies that if your product, your washing machine lasts for 10 years, you're very likely to buy the same brand because you've had it for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Other products will have different thresholds for that. But they very deliberately kept that perception piece in play. And instead of going to the, well, if it works for 5 years, you're going to buy our product, where the study and their information is saying, if I have a washing machine that only works for 5 years, I'm not buying that brand again. It's enough of a breaking of the expectation that you lose the loyalty.
Absolutely. And going back to what you were saying about Microsoft and a good number of other companies have said, well, we actually want these things to break pretty quickly so that they will buy another phone. What they really forget is that it's actually the extreme cases which do you in. So those who are involved in understanding what acceptable warranty rates are, typically, let's just say 5%. Let's pick a number. Some industries, that's too high. Some other industries, that's too low.
Yep.
Let's just say 5% is a suitable warranty / customer. An irate customer needs to come to you and deal with getting a new phone.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's anything above 5%, then your business model is not sustainable because you lose too many customers. And if it's anything below 5%, that's great. Let's say 5% is the threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And you go into these companies and you say, okay, let's just, then they often don't know what the acceptable threshold is. And so let's just pick 5%. We can look at warrantyweek.com to challenge it. Let's just say it's 5%.
Right.
And you say, because all these companies too, who haven't really put too much thought in it, will always assume, I know your favorite, an MTBF, a constant hazard rate. So no worries. Okay, so you got a hazard rate of 5% in a year. That means that your threshold for reliability is 20 years, because the inverse of 0.05 is 20. Yeah. So for you to be successful, then your phone needs to have a design life of 20 years because everything else you're assuming an MTBF or a constant hazard rate for. So I'm just throwing your rationale back at you.
I'm biting my lip. I'm trying to stay out of it. But I understand the analogies that we're going to create a way over designed product in order to make it survive the first year or 2 years.
But the next step of my conversation is to say that is as insane as your assumption that it's an MTBF in the first place.
So, Okay. All right. Yeah. Try to recover in there. I see.
No, but that's my point is I come back and saying using your ridiculous assumptions, you're telling me that, you know, you want to have, if we assume it, you tell me what the warranty rates, pick 10%, then your MTBF based on your assumptions is 10 years. And that's just, even that makes people's heads explode. So don't get me wrong, Fred. I'm not jumping on board the MTBF bandwagon by any stretch.
We'd have to talk offline if that was the case.
No, I'm just trying to throw their rationale back at them.
Well, there's a piece to that. But even, you know, I when you say let's say the market in warranty weeks, that's where the market is roughly at 5% on their annual warranty expenditures. Mm-hmm. If you're at 10%. It's not that you have less profit for a given price point. I think the piece that you mentioned is that you lose customers.
Yeah.
Because there are, in general, on average, for that market, the failure rate is half that. And unless you have the most wonderful ecosystem or operating system or feature set that nobody else has, and your market is really only the early adopters, you're going to lose because the rest of the market is moving on and providing a sustainable, meeting the expectation is one part of it. And then vice versa, if you're at 1%, everybody else is at 5%. And it's perceived that way across the market, then you can charge a premium, which is...
And you can be really, really good on customer service. So if you got that company who only has a 1% warranty rate, then they can afford to spend a lot more on of those few customers who do have an issue, making them as happy as they can possibly be with, you know, here's a replacement product, here's a complimentary credit, very sorry for all the time, you know, pain and suffering, we're going to call you in 3 weeks to make sure everything's right, all that sort of high-level customer service. But if you're dealing, then that's one in 100 products. But if you're dealing with one in 10 products, you having to do that, you just simply can't. Your customer service is going to take a hit. And often it's not that people remember not just so much that the thing failed, it's what the company did to help you out with that failure.
That's right.
If something fails and the company genuinely bends over backwards to really help you out, that is actually a really, really good thing. It can even trump the bad taste that customer had associated with the fire in the first place. It can often do that.
Yeah, you're reading my mind especially when you mentioned taste, because we had a local winery we buy some wine from on occasion, and we opened the bottle and it was corked. The cork had gone bad and it soured the wine. And we're like, oh, wow, can't drink that. And it doesn't happen very often. But we're back up at the winery a few weeks later and brought them the bottle and says, you know, I want to just let you know that this cork went bad. And I was kind of expecting to give me another bottle, but not two. And it says, oh, that shouldn't happen. Sorry for the inconvenience. You know, here you go.
There you go.
And just took care of it. They've got a customer now. I'll be back up there. I know they stand behind their product. Whereas, you know, if I go to Safeway and say, hey, I got a corked bottle of wine, they go, oh, that's too bad. No, that happens.
Yep.
All right, moving on. But yeah, I think this concept of brand loyalty has many, many factors of it. And I do think, though, that the reliability part of it, if it's a big part of whether or not it's part of your business model, right? If you don't pay attention to the durability and reliability of the product, and you have that 10% failure rate where everybody else is at 5%, you're going to lose customers because there's other options. There's a different level of expectation. And then vice versa, it's something that is a virtuous cycle. Yes, it takes investment up front to make a durable product right from the start. Yet the word of mouth and the benefits of that, even with the people that do see failures, as you mentioned, Chris, it just ripples through and creates this really solid ongoing expectation for your product. And those are all good. Now, it's going to be a topic for a whole nother discussion is, well, how do you convince management that they got to pay attention to reliability because it's connected to loyalty? When the marketing folks are saying you got to reduce the price, you got to ship it today, they're often pushing for things that are detrimental to getting a good, reliable product. And, you know, I don't know of a single team I've worked with where the marketing guy doesn't come in just before launch and says, oh, you need to add this feature. You need to design this in real quick and don't worry about testing it. It will be all right. And they're good at selling stuff, these folks. They've read all the right books. They know all the buttons to push. And then that being a problem. Way too many stories there. So that's another subject.
Absolutely.
So you're going to join me for that someday, Chris? We'll talk about that.
Why not? It's good to get it all out.
Yeah. And so for our listeners, thanks for joining us. And head over to reliability.fm, and you can find comment fields and ways to get in touch with Chris or I or any of the hosts on Speaking of Reliability. And let us know your thoughts. What questions or input do you have to this discussion concerning brand loyalty? And how have you been successful at getting reliability elements tied to this brand loyalty argument? And or have you? Have you tried to do that? We'd love to hear from you. What's your questions and thoughts on this? And thanks again for joining us. So with that, Chris, I think we'll have to go find another cup of coffee.
Thanks, Fred. Okay. And I can wholeheartedly agree.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.